Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio on a Farmer Friday, taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD or by email radio@agphd.com. And Brian, let's just dive right into those emails in the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
All right, we talk about salt a lot, especially when it comes to manure and not overdoing the salt. Rachel sends in a comment. She said, guys, salt is critically important. However, we do need to make sure that sodium's in a proper ratio with, firstly, potassium, as well as magnesium and calcium. Don't scare people off on something that's healthy, especially without knowing the full picture.
No. I'm going to scare people off because what we're concerned about is overdoing it. And that's what we say every single time. It's not we can't be helped by maybe a tiny little bit of salt, but it's the exact same thing in human health. So when you go to see your doctor, I'm going to assume your doctor says, keep your salt intake down. The doctor doesn't say you can't use any salt, just like we don't say you can't use any salt. So I understand where you're going with this. And I'd also say sodium is way more important than salt. We need sodium in the plant. So a level of sodium, great. A level of salt, great. Just like a level of nitrogen or a level of boron. Those things are really good, but we have to be real careful. If we overdo anything, anything can be a killer. Too much water can be a killer. Too much of anything is not good. So we want everything in moderation.
All right. I get a question on plant growth hormones. This one comes in from David. He said, we're growing corn and soybeans in central Minnesota, and our liquid program that we're doing on corn is 1034-0 in furrow plus 4.75 gallons, at 4.75 gallons per acre. And we're also using zinc citrachem 10% at a quarter gallon per acre. And Ascend Pro. Now, comparing labels, MegaGrow L is listed for both corn and soybeans, but Ascend Pro is listed only for corn, not soybeans. But comparing the active ingredients, they both have two common ingredients, but Ascend Pro also has gibberellins. So are the gibberellins why it's not labeled for soybeans?
Well, the gibberellins aren't really going to help the soybeans, I guess, is the big thing. And so that's probably why. You are probably correct. Even in corn, we usually don't find that gibberellic acid at that early stage is a big deal. So we like spraying gibberellic acid post-emerge, and then we get some good growth on the plant. For silage corn, we have not found yet that there is a gain in yield in corn or wheat or really any grass crop that we've tried it on, spraying gibberellic acid on there. We can get more tonnage, and that's awesome if you need tonnage. But if all you're after is grain, the gibberellic acid just doesn't seem to matter.
All right. Thanks for the question. Got this one from Kurt over in South Central Illinois. I grow.
Oh, hey, by the way, he said 4.75 gallons of, was that 1034-0?
Yep.
It's really pushing it. So we were just talking about salt right before that. I would not do that.
The other thing,
Three gallons is our cutoff on 30-inch rows, and that's even if you have decent rain and heavy soils. So I'm worried. I'm just worried for you. Sooner or later, that might be just a little bit too much.
The zinc product sounded like a zinc citrate, too, which has been pretty harmful on biology.
Yeah, if he was using biology. But it doesn't sound like he is.
Okay. Kurt over in South Central Illinois said, I'm growing corn, soybeans, wheat, and hay. I've got an old worn-out drill. I'm just curious, do you see a big difference from 7.5-inch drilled wheat, where my placement's not the greatest, versus what if I went to 15 inches? Is there any negative impacts there? Also, does broadcasting the wheat with dry fertilizer work? Some guys around me are switching to that instead of drilling.
Yes, you can do any of those things. Do I think there's going to be a big difference? No. However, if you want to cut your seeding rate a little bit, the thing is, we like doing that in corn and soybeans where we can because it can save you a lot of money per acre. Wheat, it's pretty cheap. You're probably not going to save a lot of money per acre. Now, I will say we like varying the population in wheat just like we do in corn and soybeans with wheat, I think about it a lot like soybeans, where in the very best areas, sometimes we like cutting back the population there. And the reason why is lodging. I worry about lodging when you get that population too high. The downside to going to wider rows, even though it's only 15, you might have a little bit more weed issue out there. Not probably going to be a big deal, but there is a slight advantage to broadcasting the seed or going 7.5-inch rows.
All right, thanks for the question. Get this one from Jeremy in South Central Kansas. He said, I heard Darren mention a homogeneous micronutrient prill on a previous radio show. Yeah, it was TJ Micromix that we used to use.
Well, we did some corn amp mix, and they had, so it was amp mix, and I don't remember which fertilizer company it was, but we did a bunch of that for a few years.
I also looked online, and I know we looked for a lot of different mixes, and there were some available in different areas of the country. So it might be something to talk to the fertilizer dealers in your area about, too, okay, what do you have for micronutrient mixes in a dry that we could try to build up all our micronutrient levels at the same time with?
But a homogeneous prill makes a lot more sense than, I've got just a blend of all these different micronutrients, because then you're ending up with one micro over here and one over there and all that kind of thing. So I like the homogeneous prill. Now, you might say, why did you stop using that? Well, the reason why, we were just trying to build up all micronutrients for a while. Then we got it down to just one or two. So then we were going with more individual products and varying the rates.
Also, Jeremy mentions they're thinking of doing this with the strip tiller. Now, Jeremy, if you're moving that strip around, this is probably going to be fine to do it over a few years that way. But we like to do those builds in a broadcast. It increases the safety factor, and then it builds the whole soil profile up for us, and that's kind of a nice thing. So you might consider broadcasting it and then still doing your strip till, but just that would work in the micros from the areas that you're running your strips on. It's Farmer Friday on today's Ag PhD radio show, and our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
Are you ready for better efficiency, more productivity, higher yields? Then you're ready for John Deere Precision Technology, which starts with three core pieces. First, a G5 display gives fast views of your work and a window to future technology. A Starfire receiver gives you sub-inch repeatable accuracy without an RTK base station. And a JD Link modem gives you a live view of your entire operation. Get precise and talk with your John Deere dealer or visit johndeere.com/Facebook.
The hard-working, independent spirit of rural America can often be isolating. It's not often discussed, but mental health issues are real. Now's the time to lead by example, talk openly, and show that a strong mind is just as important as a strong body. FMC is proud to be working toward ending the misconceptions around mental health. Through awareness, guidance, and action, together we can uproot the stigma.
Your farm's greatest challenge is making sure your crop has enough fertility to reach its yield goals. But how do you know if you're applying too much of any one nutrient? Fine-tune your fertility plan with Verify. Your combine collects hundreds of yield data points per acre. Verify takes that data and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, so you can be confident you're not over-applying. Get started today at verify.com. That's VRAFY.com.
This is Officer Jones calling for backup.
10-4, location?
Graber back 40. Looks like we've got Palmer amaranth, kochia, some common water hemp.
Resistant weeds. Copy that. You'll need a good tank mix partner. I'm sending Tough 5EC.
Come out with your hands up!
Guys, we're surrounded.
Crack down on repeat offenders. Add Tough 5EC to your post-emergence tank mix. Learn more at toughonweeds.com. Always read and follow label directions. Tough is a registered trademark of Belgium Crop Protection.
It's Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can email us radio@agphd.com. Got our friend Tony Wendler with Farm Shop MFG up next, and I'm kind of curious, Tony, is the planter running already on your farm?
Hey, no, but I actually talked to the fertilizer spray company to come out and spray my fields. They're doing the neighbors. And I said, hey, put it out there and get the herbicide on. And, yeah, it's getting close.
Yeah, it's a great time to get those pre's out there.
Yeah.
Especially if we get some rain coming up. Sounds like we might have some rain here that will get that all worked in. That'd be fantastic.
It's supposed to be windy tomorrow. I've got a neighbor who's got 600 acres in front of me.
Oh, and so it might not happen.
Next on the list. Yeah, I'm. I told him, you know, tomorrow with the wind, I said, don't do it then. So hopefully they'll, I don't know if they'll work Sunday or not.
Yeah, and Sunday, it looks like Monday. Looks like there's pretty good wind, at least the first half of the day on Sunday. So, yeah, I know it gets to be tricky this time of year, and oftentimes it is windy. Talk to us about the planting a little bit. I know we talk about closing wheels and what a difference that can make for growers and digging behind planters and stuff. Kind of your last shot to do that, Tony, because I think April 10th is that first crop insurance date in this area anyway for planting corn. So guys are going to start rolling.
A lot of them are, you know, what's going on. I have a lot of conversations, a lot of people trying a few rows to see how it compares to other products they've used or to the traditional rubber closing wheels. So there's a lot of activity in that relation. A lot of people now making last minute purchases, and we've got good inventory for them to get it done. So we're current on shipping. If somebody wants to step up and get a few more bushels in their bin this fall, we'll help them do it, and we'll get the product out so they can get it on their planter.
You know, the cool thing, too, about this, Tony, is a lot of times guys say, oh, man, it's a lot of work doing trials on my farm. This one's pretty simple. You just put a few row units on, and you compare as you go through the season.
You know, hey, I've conversations like this. I tell people, put it on, take your planter out, drag it through some dirt, and dig behind these wheels and dig behind the others, and look at the job you're doing on bringing that furrow together. And then the other is guy today, 24 row planter, put 8 rows in his pinch rows last year. So they were the best ones. So he bought 16 more rows to finish the planter off.
Hey, Tony, I got a question for you. So I've had people give us feedback, and I had one guy that said, man, I don't like any wheels that have spikes on them. They flip my seed out. I haven't seen that with the germinator closing wheels. What's the difference?
Well, a couple things. Because we've got that inner shoulder, our spikes sit further out. And we've got our gap between our inner shoulder is actually 1.4 inches to 1.5 inches, or it's 1.5 inches minus a little. You keep your closing wheel arm centered, and we've run this thing up to 12 mile an hour, and we don't throw seed out. So the guys at the high speed, first of all, I'll tell you, 12 mile an hour, I rode in the buddy seat. It was miserable. Don't do that. We went back and dug behind. Everything was right there at 2 inches. It wasn't throwing anything. So the big key to ours is that the spikes are sitting out there wide. When they go on the ground, they make the soil squirt towards the furrow, and then the shoulders right there to put it on. And I kind of say it's a two-stage thing. The spikes, as it rotates around, leads into the soil, and then the shoulders right behind it to firm it. And together, they make a pinch point across from each other, and that's how we create that firm vein at the bottom. And no other wheel can do that. So it's an interesting thing. And the other thing is, I got a notice here a few weeks ago that my provisional patent is going to be going through to a full patent.
That's awesome. Congratulations, Tony.
Yeah.
You know, and one,
I thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah, that's super cool. Well, one last thing, I guess, and I'll just leave you with this. I was just up at a meeting earlier this week up in North Dakota, and I had a farmer that told me, hey, you know what I did? I put a camera on to watch my row unit just to see how things were going. And he goes, wow, that was really cool. So I think if you're doing a trial, that'd be another thing to add on. Just snap a camera on a couple different row units and see what the difference is. And yeah, like you say, if you're running across at high speed especially, it will become evident very quickly. Hey, Tony, thank you so much. We really appreciate having you on. And again, if anybody needs to get a hold of Tony or wants to check out what he's doing, just check out farmshopmfg.com. Let's head down to Nebraska. I got Chelsea on with us right now. How's it going, Chelsea?
Hey, hi, guys. Not too much. Just another little bit windy day in Nebraska, I guess. How about you?
Yeah, we're getting that wind, too. And it's okay. It can blow for a little bit, but yeah. We're hoping next week to plant on our farm. How about you?
Yeah, we're all but ready to put the seed in. It's getting to be that time of year, just kind of waiting on Mother Nature to give us some better days to get some tillage done in front of the planter. Our rotation is we usually do two corn and one bean, and we are pretty sandy here, so doing fall tillage isn't always ideal for us.
No.
And trying to conserve that topsoil and not letting things blow there. So, and I tell you, if you don't get that tillage done right in the spring for the planter, it shows up behind the combine. It does. You can see it.
Absolutely. Hey, let me ask you a question. I know there are some guys down in Nebraska that like to get going super early on soybeans. Does that describe your farm, or are you kind of more of a traditional, let's get the corn in and then worry about the beans?
Oh, no, nope. Sooner the better for us. In fact, this year we just bought a bean planter specifically so that we could hopefully get them in earlier for that reason, too. And we did take advantage of that crop insurance option this year where we could plant a little sooner if Mother Nature allows us. So our yield and just other things have shown no matter what the conditions, the sooner the better usually for us.
We've gotten some feedback from non-farmers saying, well, if early planting is so good, why don't farmers do it every year? And you hit on it there, Chelsea. Mother Nature doesn't always allow that to happen for us. I know we've got a shot of some rain coming in, and I guess, we're hoping it's not too much because we'd like to get started on planting.
Yes, same. Yep. Now, if February and March look so promising, it was so nice. It gave, the frost went out, gave us an opportunity to get lime spread and other things prepared. But it'll come around, I guess. It always does, doesn't it?
Hey, you mentioned lime there. Let me ask you a question about that. I know this really varies depending on where you're at in the country. Do you have a local ag lime supply? Are there several different supplies that you could choose from? Or how did you end up getting lime onto your farm?
Sure. Our local co-ops or fertilizer companies, they do, they can get it in, or we don't have a place real close to us, but we went and got our own. We have a side dump trailer and the means to do that. So we had to go about almost 3 hours away. There's down by Lincoln and Nelson, Nebraska. We like the ag lime or a Dolomedic. So it depends, if you're needing the higher calcium kind. So, and for long-term, we do it about every 3 years. That is a little bit of a challenge and a cost, but where we only have to do it every third year, we kind of plan for it and able to pile it in the wintertime and then spread it in time before spring.
Yeah, it sure is nice having your own trucks that you have the freedom to do some of these things too. Back to your rotation. You said 2 years of corn, 1 year of soybeans, so you got a lot of corn to get in the ground. What are the big challenges? Is it gosses? Is it rootworm? Or is tar spot a big thing on your farm yet? What are you most concerned about on the corn?
Yeah, probably more rootworm, I would say. We thankfully haven't had a lot of disease issues in corn. Depends on the hybrid. We have seen some gosses, but it seems like each year that's getting better with the genetics and stuff. And we're always trying different things, whether in fungicides or since we are all irrigated, we have options to run it through our pivot too. To make things more efficient to avoid the disease pressure. And my husband always says he never wants his corn to ever have a bad day.
So that's Chelsea. Easier said than done with the weather you guys get down in Nebraska sometimes. Hey, Chelsea, thank you so much. Good luck to you guys heading into planting season. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Because the challenges you face are getting bigger every year, BASF is committed to helping with more than boots on the ground. We're committed to boots in the mud, boots on the steps of your truck, your tractor, your combine, the linoleum tiles of your coffee shop, the concrete of your co-op, the gravel in your shed. So we can listen, learn firsthand, help right now to ensure success. BASF, helping you do the biggest job on earth.
Warning, high yields incoming. Upgrading your planter with Germinator closing wheels can increase your corn yields by 13 bushels in no-till and 7 bushels in conventional. Are your bins ready? Call Farm Shop MFG at 712-520-6051.
Get more durability for less downtime with Soil Warrior Strip Tillage from Environmental Tillage Systems. Improve fertilizer efficiency and reduce passes and fuel usage. Now that's ROI. Learn more about ETS at soilwarrior.com.
My mom's got a new Case IH tractor, and it can do it all. Bale hay all day. See in the dark with its powerful LED lights. Hook up all the implements. Shift like a race car. Steer with ease. And it can also cool my juice box. Yeah, her Case IH tractor can do everything she needs it to.
Looking for a tractor that can do it all? Check out caseih.com.
On your farm, you spend thousands on fertilizer every season. But how do you know if any nutrient you apply is paying for itself? Build a fertility plan like never before with Verify. With Verify's soil point to yield analysis, you can automatically see the connection between your soil test and yield data to see which fertilizer dollars will make you money and which won't. Go to verify.com to get started today. That's VRAFY.com.
Get uniform control in your fields with trusted, hard-working Lucento fungicide. Control the toughest diseases with a dual mode of action fungicide that consistently outperforms the competition in field trials. Lucento fungicide from FMC works overtime for lasting control to help improve crop yields. Talk about getting the job done. Visit your FMC retailer or lucento.ag.fmc.com for hard-working control in your fields. Always read and follow all label directions.
Weeds rob you of yield potential, so rob them of the chance to grow with powerful corn herbicide solutions from Corteva Agriscience. Weeds won't know what hit them, but you will, because you can count on proven top herbicides like Resicor or SureStart 2 or the new game-changing herbicide Cairo to effectively control weeds. That way, you spend less time worrying about unwanted yield-robbing weeds and have more time to power on with your day. Learn more at PowerOverWeeds.com.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio on a Farmer Friday. We're taking your calls and questions throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD or by email radio@agphd.com. And up here in the north, we're getting ready to start. Hopefully next week we'll be able to start planting, but down in the south things have been going on for a while. I got our friend Cedric down in Louisiana on now. How's it going, Cedric?
Fine. How are you, Darren?
Well, pretty good. We're just itching to start planting some corn up here. How about on your farm? What's going on?
We're spraying herbicides and trying to get some pastures back together. Everything's greening up and trying to take care of some of those annual winter weeds, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Talk to us about that. What are the worst weeds for you in pasture? There's some common ones. You're like, oh, man, every year we're dealing with this particular weed or that one.
Yeah, so a lot of stuff from the carrot family, and we've been lucky enough this last two seasons to be using Duracor from Corteva.
Yeah.
It's been helping us out a lot. In the wintertime, due to the fact we had a bad drought last summer and fall, I had a lot of weed pressure this winter when we started getting moisture because a lot of the forage had, you know, just died out. So I didn't pre-treated with no Resilon from Bayer. I used to do that in the early, late winter and late fall. So I only did the Resilon in February, like around Valentine's Day, like they suggest. But that's something that has to lay on the soil surface until the rain comes, and it just kills the pre-emergent weeds. So
sure.
I waited a month or so, and now I've came back with the Duracor now. And
yep.
Within 24 hours, I'm seeing stuff was yellowing up on me, Darren.
That's awesome. That is awesome. That's what I like. You know, I really don't like weeds, as I would say it's pretty famously known, but I love seeing them die quickly. And a lot of these products that work slow are kind of frustrating for me. So I agree. I agree about Duracor. I've heard a lot of good things about that product around the country. People have really liked having a new weapon to go after some of these weeds. All right, so you get that done. Are you getting enough rain? Is everything kind of turning around that you're going to have good grass growth this year?
Yeah, we're hoping so. I came across some giant Bermuda seeds out of this seed factory out of East Texas, but I couldn't. I was going to try a little small plot into one of my pastures, but I couldn't do it because the guy, after he sold me these seeds there, he tells me he didn't know if it would germinate after I told him I had already sprayed the pasture with Resilon. So I just didn't want to put those seeds out there for the birds to eat up and go to waste. So I'm going to wait till next year to try them.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, he couldn't guarantee they would germinate. You know how that is.
Yeah, and it's
but
tough.
He got the sale on me.
Well, it's tough with some of these things too, because they don't do all the testing on absolutely every different kind of grass, and maybe it would be just fine, but I kind of agree with you. If it's like, man, I already made this investment, I hate to waste it. And
right,
so yeah, it's tough to know exactly how to handle that. We're coming out of 3.5 years, 4 years of drought up here too, so we're looking forward to getting some rain this spring. We got a couple inches here recently in two different shots, and I got a chance for some rain Saturday, so maybe things are going to turn around up here too. I hope so.
Let me ask you something about Ag PhD field day. You guys have any plots for forage, like alfalfa, or you guys just do strictly beans, sunflowers, and that kind of stuff?
You know, perennial crops like alfalfa are tough for us to do in that environment, and we have had some alfalfa before there. I don't know that we have any planned this year, Brian. Do you?
No, but
what do you suggest,
should.
Cedric?
It
sounds like you might have some
on our farm.
Sounds like you might have some giant Bermuda seed. You might be willing to send up this way that we could try that. But you know, at this point, we haven't. But if you tell us you're coming up here and you want to see something, we might change our plans. We haven't got everything planted out there yet.
Okay, I'll think about if I want to split the cost with you guys.
Like Brad said, we do have a ton of alfalfa around here, and if you come up, we'd absolutely take the time to show you around.
All right, then, guys.
Awesome.
Good talking to you all.
You bet. Thanks a lot, Cedric. Good luck this season.
You too, sir. Bye-bye.
Got Pat with us down in Iowa right now. How's it going, Pat?
Oh, good. Good.
So it's just about time to start planting corn. Is anybody sneaking out there a little early in your neighborhood, or is everybody kind of waiting for another week or two?
Last week's been snowy, rainy, wet, so anybody even thought about it to kind of force their hand, I guess. But I think it's going to be another good week before anybody considers even early planting around here.
Yeah, we got one more, hopefully, I guess, one more little shot of moisture that we're going to get to. So that, you're right, that keeps us honest, because I think more guys would have probably pushed the limits just a little bit as warm as we've been through the winter.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I wish we had February weather right now. It's kind of, April didn't start off very good for us.
You know, this wind, too, has been something, and I know going into this weekend, they're talking it's going to be super windy, and that always makes us nervous, too, about doing a whole lot before then or right around that wind. What have you seen in your area? I mean, are you seeing more guys doing less tillage, more cover crops, any of that kind of stuff, or just trying to time the tillage until right when they need it?
There's maybe an uptick in cover crops again. It was kind of heavy maybe 5 or 10 years ago and kind of slacked off and going back up. But no, otherwise, very little no-till. I'm a no-tiller, but there's some strip-till in the area, I guess. But otherwise, pretty much conventional, and I guess it's kind of business as usual.
Sure. Okay, so if you're no-till, and a lot of your neighbors might not be, do you have different weeds that you're facing, or is it still kind of the usual suspects with pigweed species and things like that?
Yeah. Water hemp treats everybody equally, I guess, so we got that. But I do have mare's tail a little bit, and for some reason, dandelion kind of came back the last 2 years, and I'm not exactly sure why. I used to have it when I first started no-tilling 30 years ago, and for some reason the last 2 years they're heavy, and I sprayed them last fall, and looks like that did the trick for me.
Awesome.
Spraying lines in spring does not. I've found out I've done it before and it worked, but the last 2 years it just curled them up, but never got anything killed.
Yeah, it is tricky. And I would say the same thing on our farm with the dandelions, that we've had some challenges. We got to get warm weather, or it's really tough to knock those things out. They got quite a root underneath them. And here's the other thing that we found out, Pat, and this is something that Neil Kinsey had tipped us off to. What's your calcium level? And do you have enough available calcium out there? Dandelion actually has a competitive advantage if your calcium levels are low. So if you need to get some lime out in a few spots, that's usually where the dandelion gets started. That might not be the case for you because, there's plenty of other conditions, but it just does give dandelion an unfair advantage.
Yeah, I just did soil samples last fall on one farm, and actually on like 300 acres, I spread $6,000 worth of lime and did the whole farm. So nothing was low on pH at all, really. So
good.
Road ditches, and got a 10-year set aside next to me too, which kind of where the seed came from, and it just blows in with all the wind we get anymore.
Sure. You know, we were just talking about ditches, and I remember back in the day what we were doing in the ditches compared to as soon as we started spraying mostly Roundup out in the field for a lot of years. It's like, I can't really hang the boom over the ditch anymore. If I was just spraying a 2,4-D type product, I could do those kinds of things. So, it's interesting with dicamba tolerant and 2,4-D tolerant soybeans. It might give a guy an opportunity to do some of those things and knock some of those ditch weeds out too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, always something, always a project going on the farm, and like you say, sometimes the weather doesn't cooperate right when you need it to, but hopefully things turn out well for you guys. Hopefully it gets back to nice, warm and sunny out there when planting gets rolling around. So good luck, Pat. Really appreciate having you on.
All right, thank you very much.
You bet. It's Farmer Friday here on Ag PhD Radio. If you've got a question for us, you can sure send us an email, radio@agphd.com. And if you're sending in a soil sample or kind of a complicated question, that's a nice way to do it. Put it in front of us in black and white. But you can absolutely call in as well, 844-44-AG-PHD. We'd be happy to talk to you. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Morton Buildings has served the American farmer for more than 120 years. From manufacturing our own building components to constructing your building, Morton takes pride in being the industry leader in post-frame construction by providing a quality building and exceptional customer service. A Morton is built to last for generations. To get started on your next project, please visit MortonBuildings.com.
Are you being offered a complete seed treatment package? If your seed treatment doesn't help against soybean diseases like white mold, sudden death syndrome, and rhizoctonia, then it's not complete. Heads Up Seed Treatment offers protection against all of these diseases through its unique mode of action, systemic acquired resistance. Don't get caught off guard in 2024. Get the best defense against the unpredictability of each season by completing your seed treatment package with Heads Up. Visit headsupst.com to learn more.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of grower success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from farmer Rob Schaefer.
Residuals have become a big part of our chemical programs with trying to battle water hemp, and also mare's tail is our big one. It's done a real good job of controlling those. You don't have to, you know, put a bunch of gallons in your sprayer, cover a lot of acres that way.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Every season, you're collecting yield data on virtually every acre of your farm. But what good is your data if you never use it? Put it to work with Verify. Verify takes yield data directly from your combine and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, ensuring your crops get what they need, right where they need it, no matter what equipment you run. Go to verify.com to find an expert to help you get started. That's VRAFY.com.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Nothing but net. Win your soybean season with the fast knockdown and lasting broad-spectrum control of Elevest Insect Control from FMC. Take on armyworms, stink bugs, soybean loopers, and more with the maximized ratio of premier active ingredients for better overall control of more than 40 labeled pests. Visit your FMC retailer or elevest.ag.fmc.com to up your game this season. Always read and follow all label directions.
It's Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us. You can email us your questions, radio at agphd.com, or give us a phone call, 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can do both, like Paul in Minnesota. We got Paul on right now to talk through some soil tests here, some turkey litter, some fertilizer questions. Kind of interesting, Paul. You got a lot of stuff going on there.
Yeah, we do. How are we doing today?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Okay, so Brian's got a hold of your soil samples here. He's kind of running through those. And one of the questions that you've got about front-loading nitrogen on this continuous cornfield, talk to us about that a little bit.
Well, it's a little confusing for me because in my mind, the turkey litter nitrogen doesn't come available till later in the summer. So I'm wondering, does that count against the what the soil can hold, you know, in the early months, you know, or do we not have to count all of that until later?
Right. Yeah, you don't have to worry about that. So there's going to be some portion of, I don't care if we're talking manure, litter, compost, anything, there's some portion that's going to be available today. But then there's a bunch in the organic form typically that's going to slowly release over time. So that's great. It's the same thing that we talk about with commercial fertilizer. If you can use a nitrogen stabilizer, only it's even better with having litter, because literally that breakdown could be over 2 or 3 years. A nitrogen stabilizer is probably only going to help you for a month.
Right. Okay. Okay. So we're okay spreading some urea in the spring and then relying on the litter later on and the organic matter.
Yep.
Coming available.
Absolutely. Okay. Now, I would say this. When I look at your soil tests, your sulfur levels aren't great. I mean, they're not horrible, but they're not great. And so I would, like on our own farm, we do just about every year put some ammonium sulfate on, even if it's just 100 pounds or something. So I'm just saying, yes, we like urea. We use urea on our farm too. But a portion of your nitrogen could be something like ammonium sulfate if you want to get a little bit more sulfur out there. Just something for you to think about. Also, ammonium sulfate, you don't have to worry about losing it so quick like you do with urea. Ammonium sulfate kind of slowly releases over 30 to 60 days, whereas urea, I mean, you have to worry about even losing it to volatilization within 48 hours if you don't get it covered, if you don't get a rain on it, you don't till it in. So just something for you to consider at least. But what else did you have for questions on your soil test here?
That is our plan. I don't know, on the email that I sent, the soil test was taken, and then we spread 250 pounds of K and 50 pounds of elemental sulfur last fall.
Okay.
And then
So you're good on sulfur then, probably. Yep, okay.
Well, we were probably going to put a little bit of sulfur out this spring.
Sure.
Like you were saying.
Yep.
And then the other question, what was the other question I had on
micronutrients?
Micros, yes. What would you guys be doing there? Or, you know, I'm looking at the manganese, the boron, and the zinc.
Okay.
How would you handle that?
Yep.
It's all owned land.
Great.
So.
Okay, the zinc, I would say we want to get that in roughly a 10-to-1 ratio of your P1 phosphorus, and a lot of your P1 phosphorus levels are in the 50, 60, 70 kind of range. which means you need your zinc at 5, 6, 7, somewhere around that level. So if it's me, I'm just going to go out there with some zinc sulfate in one shot. Isn't going to take that much, isn't going to cost that much, and then you're going to fix your problem, and your zinc levels should stay up, and all you need is a tiny little bit every year from then on just for maintenance. So that's how I'd fix the zinc. As far as the boron goes, you have relatively heavy soil. Now, granted, you have some spots that are down to 16, 18 cation exchange capacity, but you have a whole bunch that's in the 20s all the way up to 28. So you have pretty heavy ground. And so what we do on ground like that is we like putting out dry boron to really build the soil. If you look at your calcium number, calcium parts per million, just take that number and divide it by 1,000, and that'll tell you roughly where your boron could be in terms of parts per million. So your calcium, your, let's say 2,500 is real common. You got some 3,500, something like that. So you easily could go 2.5, 3 parts per million on boron, and you'd have no big problem. I just say a lot of people have to worry about leaching with boron. Because you have heavier soil, you don't have to worry about it as much. So that is an option for you on boron. That's what we like doing. That's really made a difference on our farm. It's fairly inexpensive to do it that way. And then if you want to keep supplementing every year with a little bit of liquid, you kind of go from there. And once every 2 or 3 years, you might have to address the dry boron thing again. Other than that, the manganese, we have a real difficult time with the DTPA manganese test. It ties so much to soil pH and not so much to what's actually in the soil that I just don't personally trust it that well. So these are DTPA micronutrient tests. And so I'm a little concerned that it may not be true, but it certainly could be true that you have less than 10 parts per million in all areas on your farm. The reason why I get a little hung up on this too is zinc's cheap, boron's cheap, copper's cheap. Manganese is not cheap. So if you say, well, boy, I want to get to whatever, 20 parts per million, what are you going to spend per acre? $50? It's like, oh my gosh, I don't mind spending 10 or 20 bucks for something that's going to hang around for a really long time. But when you start talking $50 an acre, that's where I'd kind of like to know for sure that that's necessary. So what I'm telling you here is if it's me, let's say I had your ground, your plan sounds great to me. I think what you're doing is awesome. Looks like your soil is in pretty good shape, and you're probably going to get this zinc and the boron addressed now. But if it's me, I would probably only try some manganese in some areas. I might put out 50 pounds of manganese sulfate, maybe even 100 pounds of manganese sulfate, just in a couple of strips or something, and just see if it makes a difference. I would also next year consider doing a Malic 3 test on manganese, and let's just see what that test says, because like on our own farm, our DTPA tests also were saying, oh, we had 10 parts per million. And then we run the DTPA and it says we have 150 parts per million. And I'm going, oh, okay. No wonder our applied manganese wasn't paying off so well for us.
Hey, one more quick question. As far as the zinc and the boron,
yes,
can that be added to the urea and, you know, just do a blanket spread here this spring? Or does that need to be a separate operation while they separate out?
I would say talk to your fertilizer dealer, because if the bulk densities are different, which I'm going to guess they are, that's where we have a problem. So unfortunately, you're probably going to have to either do them in separate applications, or your fertilizer dealer most likely has a 3-compartment spreader, and they could put urea in one, zinc sulfate in the other, boron in the other. And then that's literally what we have on our farm. And then I can vary the rate on all 3 of those independently, and I love that. It really saves us a lot of time and a lot of money.
Yep. Okay, sounds real good.
All right. Well, good luck, Paul.
Thank you.
You bet. You thanks for calling.
Have a good spring. Bye.
Thanks. You too.
Got a question in from Wade, and he said, I'm down in southeast Iowa. I'm wondering how you guys make seeding prescriptions for your corn silage fields. We do variable rate seeding on all our fields and use historical yield to verify and adjust zones for the following years based on that. On our farm, we have fields that when they are corn, they always go silage, so we just don't have the yield history. for those fields. I know you can use soil data, topography maybe.
Yep.
Just curious, what are your thoughts for creating those recs and verifying for future years?
Yeah, so the nice thing now is, so we don't do the silage cutting. The dairy has somebody that comes in and does it. But with these newer silage cutters, we can get yield maps on our combines. They can get tonnage maps. And so we can make the conversion. So for us, roughly, it's going to be about 9. We multiply whatever they end up with for tons times 9, maybe a little more, a little less, depending on the year. But multiply that times 9, and that'll get you pretty close for yield, and then you kind of set it up that way. So that's what I prefer to do. But, yeah, we even have one of our guys that we work with. He does it based on satellite imagery, too, so lots of different ways to do it. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from agronomy manager Nate Honeck.
We've seen tremendous weed control that was sprayed in dry, hot conditions with very little rain within 2 weeks after application. Very easy application. Definitely tank mix well with the various products we used.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
If you look close enough, you can see the hidden potential within your fields. That's why an AgroLiquid nutrition plan starts with the crop and identifies the precise combination of primary nutrients while focusing on the support of secondary and micronutrients. So every nutrient is working in harmony for your crop to reach its full potential, maximizing growth while offering lower use rates. Apply less, expect more? Precisely. Find an AgroLiquid dealer at agroliquid.com.
Farming comes with trade-offs. An extra pass means dinner in the cab. An early morning becomes a late night. Unnecessary restrictions turn into headaches. But when you make Enlist herbicides the foundation of your herbicide program, the trade-offs will be in your favor. Effective weed control that's ready to work when you are. Flexible tank mix options and neighbor-friendly applications. All without the need to jump through hoops. See what you'll gain with America's most trusted herbicide system protecting your Enlist E3 soybean fields at Enlist.com.
Save plenty of green on select John Deere compact utility tractors during the Go Green Save Green event at C&B. Payments start as low as $253 per month. Visit DeereEquipment.com. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Some restrictions apply. See dealer for details.
From machine storage buildings and farm shops to dependable buildings to house your livestock, regardless of building size or use, Morton has a building for every budget. To learn how we can help you expand your farm operation, visit MortonBuildings.com.
Want a product that will give you nitrogen all season long? Then you want to try Envita. Envita gets directly into the cells of the plants, and it's easy to apply, foliar or in furrow. Envita provides the flexibility you need for your farm practices. Whether you want to reduce your nitrogen and maintain yield, or maintain your nitrogen and increase yield, Envita fits your farm. Envita SC formulation is OMRI registered. To learn more about Envita, visit azotic.com. That's AZOTIC.com.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from the Morton Studio on a Farmer Friday, taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD or by email radio@agphd.com. Get this one in from Mitchell down in Australia. He said, hey guys, we did our first grid soil testing. I'll admit, we just did it at 2 hectare grids, roughly 5 acres. So it's bigger than what you guys do, but hey, it's a start. I was told that it would be a complete test, but I was left disappointed because all we got back was P and K, CEC, pH, calcium, and sodium. So I'm wondering, I attached the various maps I received for variable rate applications. Would you be comfortable putting out potash at 1,200 kilograms per hectare with tillage? My agronomist thinks I will sterilize my soil. Now, granted, this is only in just a small area out there, but just kind of curious what you think. We have raised some pretty good crops. We're raised beds that we irrigate, and this is our first year of owning this particular ground.
Why does he want to go so much potassium? What's the deal?
Yeah, that's the follow-up question we got for you, Mitch, is why are you shooting for that high a potassium level? And, you know, for us, a lot of times we're looking at a base saturation rather than just what our parts per million are or kilograms per hectare, those kinds of things, just because we want to see how it is in ratio with other things. And if we're really high calcium and really high magnesium, then, yeah, we need to up our potassium quite a bit. But if our calcium and our magnesium are fairly low, then we don't need as much phosphorus either. What is the CEC, Brian, on that?
15 to 28. So this is a good example. And it looks like one field. I don't know how big. Did he say how big the field was?
No.
I'm not exactly sure. But anyway, looks like one field. But this is a great example of why we don't want to do one thing across the entire field. His cation exchange capacity is as low as 15.1. And it's as high as about 28, no, 30. So 15.1 to 30. So you got medium soil all the way up to super heavy soil. Now, here's the thing. When we look at potassium or magnesium to potassium, we would like that ratio roughly 2 to 1. Or 1 to 1 would be, I mean, somewhere in that range. 1 to 1, 2 to 1. Right in there. Well, he's got magnesium as high as 1,400 parts per million. His magnesium percentage is as high as 40%. So I'm guessing what he's thinking is he wants to get his ratio just a little bit better. His potassium on average, though, is already 485 parts per million. So calcium is 2,000 to 3,000. So it's basically a high magnesium soil. So rather than putting a whole bunch more K on, and you can certainly put some on. What I would do with your very high rate you're talking about, just try that on a few acres. So if you actually hurt something, it's not a problem. But where you would try it is on that super heavy ground, on 25 to 30 CEC. That's where you'd want to try it. Don't be doing that where you've got 15 CEC. So beyond that, I would say my number one concern always when I see a really high magnesium soil is drainage. If you don't have drain tile out there, then you're never going to be able to flush the excess magnesium away. What a lot of people will do is put out gypsum, for example, to raise the calcium, and then there's sulfur along with that to help flush that magnesium out. So that's something you absolutely can do. But I would say, in the meantime, I'd like to know all the rest of the nutrients. Your phosphorus, now I don't know what test this is, but your average is 37.7, and you got some that's real low. So where I'm going with this is, I get that you're focused on this potassium thing, and you could certainly try some, and in your very heavy ground, it actually could pay. But I'm looking at phosphorus. I would take a look at zinc and copper and boron and manganese. But again, when you've got an excess of something, you're going to flush that out over time with sulfur. So just make sure that you've got more than adequate sulfur all the time. If you're, and I don't have sulfur tests here, but if your sulfur tests are low, which I'm guessing they are, then you just have to make sure you keep pushing that over time. But if you actually do have poor drainage, like I believe you do, it is possible that you might have a lot of sulfur out there right now. Without looking at the whole soil test, obviously I can't tell you, but let's just say, for example, that you do test your sulfur and it's off the charts high. Well, then for sure, you got to get some drain tile out there. When you do, a lot of your excess magnesium is going to flush, or I should say some of your excess magnesium is going to flush out with that sulfur, because sulfate's leachable. It'll leach out of your ground, but I don't know. I'm looking at an incomplete test here, so I'm making a lot of guesses and a lot of assumptions here, and I do not like to do that.
All right. Well, and to be fair, Mitch said I was kind of disappointed. I was supposed to get a complete report, this is all the information I got.
Right. Well, here's the thing. It doesn't matter who's to blame. I don't really care. And I'm not trying to give you a hard time. I'm just saying if I have more information, then I can hopefully make a better recommendation for you. Now, this picture that he sent with these great big dirt clods, what does that tell you? That's high magnesium soil, and the calcium needs to be higher. So a lot of times when we see stuff like this, that's where we go, oh, okay, I looked at your soil test. I see your magnesium is way too high. But I want to know how we're doing on sulfur. Because if I tell you, oh, go add a bunch of gypsum, and you already have a crazy amount of sulfur, well, what good did that do? So I guess I just want some more information. But yes, I'm thinking if you're also saying, because he sent this picture, I want to get rid of all these great big dirt clods, it's put tile on the ground, get some gypsum out there, and then over time, this is going to disappear. Your soil will be nice. Your drainage will be better. Compaction problems will be less. So those are the things that I would be thinking about.
All right. Thanks for the question, and thanks for checking out our show. We really appreciate it, Mitch. Brian in Northwest Pennsylvania has got a question about hopper box seed treatments. He said, what are the pros and cons for hopper box seed treatments? There are several of them out there on the market. Are they good to use on soybeans as well?
Well, we're making a lot of generalizations here when we say hopper box seed treatments, because there is a wide variance. Most of them have nutrients, and I always get a little bit concerned about nutrients. So plant nutrients right on the seed, they have to be low. So you don't want to get carried away on the rate. In other words, you don't want to just hand this job over to someone else. They don't get proper instruction, and all of a sudden they put on three times too much. That could be a problem for your seed. Also, when you say, is it good to use on beans? With many of these products, they're going to talk about lower use rates on beans because, let's be honest, soybeans are more sensitive to fertility and salt than corn. So you just have to be careful about the rate. However, there are a lot of positive results out there. We're using some stuff this year that also has, there's humic acid in there. We've got some biologicals in there. I mean, there's talc and graphite. There are a lot of different things. So I'm just trying to say you've got a wide variance out there. I think overall it's a nice concept. We like the idea. We like the idea of seed treatments and things. So I just say walk before you run, try some stuff on your farm, and then go from there.
All right, thanks for the question. I got about a minute here, Brian, but I got an incomplete soil test, and this one comes from Wesley. He said, this is actually a portion of my neighbor's report. It's surprisingly uninformative compared to what we're used to, but we didn't have time to collect our own samples, so my local supplier's working with this lab, and I thought maybe I'd use them, but boy, this looks like pretty skimpy results. So here's a couple questions for you. First of all, sodium isn't listed in the base saturation calculations, just the other four nutrients, and those four add up to 100%. Is there any way to infer what sodium might be based on this at all?
No.
Okay, nope. Then next one. With this report, is there something that you'd point out I should look at closely, or should I just take everything with a grain of salt?
Yeah. I mean, since we don't have micronutrients, sulfur, things like that, we need that information. And by the way, this is fairly light soil. We're talking 8 to 12 CEC. Usually we don't have a lot of sodium hanging up in that soil, but go ahead.
And then he says, finally, considering what's not contained in this report, so an incomplete report, is it even worth the trouble of securing these tests, even if I use variable rate?
Well, I don't know that you need so much variable rate because let's put it this way. The phosphorus is really low. You have less than 100 pounds of phosphorus and less than 50 pounds of phosphorus. In most cases, that is not a lot.
Now, granted, this is a neighbor's report. Yeah. So if yours is similar to that for fertility levels, then yes.
And the potassium is less than 200 pounds in a lot of this too. So even though the base saturation doesn't look bad, it's light soil, so you need a little more K as well. So you need P and K in this ground.
Hey, thanks for the questions. We appreciate that, Wes. And thanks to you for listening today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.